why do you want to be on the county commission? Why do you feel that you're qualified? Or talk for a moment about your maybe your background and stuff too.
Okay. Yeah.
So go ahead.
Okay. The reason I'm running for Spokane County Commissioner really goes back to the time I've spent in working for the Washington State House of Representatives. That's given me an opportunity to see a lot of the good that government can do, but also a lot of the bad that government can do. But one of the things that came very apparent to me in the last 6 years working for the House of Representatives is the major role that local government can play on our everyday lives. You know, it's not always the flashy stuff, the stuff that you see on the front page of the newspaper and the media, but it's the things that you depend upon every day. It's your roads, it's your public safety, it's your property taxes, it's your regulations. I mean, it's those things that we depend upon to keep our community moving. So, I believe my vision and my view of how I think the county can help improve each of those areas is the reason why I decided to seek this position.
And I know that, and you worked as an assistant for Jeff Holy, but what's your mm-hmm. what has your background been in the legislature? What is your background?
Yeah, as you said, in the legislature, I've been there for 6 years. My first 2 years, I worked for former State Representative John Ahern, and then the last 4 years have been for State Representative Jeff Holy in the 6th legislative district. In addition to that, for the last about 5 years, my wife and I have owned a small business, a marketing company, primarily focused in print media, graphic design, and websites.
Okay.
But born and raised in North Spokane County in the Meade-Colbert area. And then that's where my wife and I live today. We built a house about 4 years ago now.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And I noticed, and one of the things you even mentioned was dealing with kind of the land out there. So maybe let's just talk about land issues and so forth.
Yeah.
Maybe just kind of your read on the urban growth expansion or just that overall, but just kind of your own opinions about growth in the county and planning for growth.
Yeah. The urban growth boundary or, you know, the Growth Management Act, I mean, was put forth in the early 90s. And I mean, there are things that it does that are good, but there are also some concerns that I have that are shared with a lot of folks. One of the sort of unintended consequences that we continue to see is, just goes back to simple economics. I mean, with supply and demand, and when they put in the urban growth boundary or the UGA, you know, the whatever terminology you prefer to use, you know, you're limiting the amount of land that's available. And so when you do that, and then over you know, 3-4 years of development, and if that land has not been expanded, the boundary has not been expanded, the land that is left, the value of that land is now increased. So, and it's more expensive for a plot of land, whether it's in a neighborhood that's up north, that's in the city, I mean, in the valley.
You're talking about areas that are inside
inside the UGA.
Okay.
So if the value goes up on that because fewer plots are available because the urban growth boundary has not been expanded, now you're looking at when you build a house on that piece of property, you're now building a house on a piece of land that is more expensive, which in turn is going to make that home more expensive when it's sold. And I see that as creating an issue of, you know, I think we need to be promoting home ownership in our community. And that just, I see that as another hurdle that can prevent a lot of, you know, a lot of people of getting into that housing market. I mean, because a home for most people is the largest asset that they have. I mean, and you know, there are so many benefits to people owning homes. You know, maybe getting out of the rental market. You know,
So what's the better answer then? I mean, I'm trying to follow. So what would your answer be to that?
So I think when when we're seeing like up north in Colbert, you know, if you look at the Wandermere area, there. Out the Hatch Wandermere area, where the majority of the development is out in the Wandermere area, every piece of land, or I've been told that every piece of land out the Hatch exit is now owned by a developer. Like there is no more land that can be purchased up that's not already owned by a developer. So,
right.
When we're faced with situations like that, I mean, because you go out to Colbert Road and just development stops there, but that's a very desirable area to live. It's in the Mead School Districts. It's close enough to town, but not too far away. You know, it's an area where people want to live. And I think that those options need to be available where if folks want to be out there, I mean, because the infrastructure's there, the utilities are run out there, but they just, the building stops at Colbert Road.
So you're saying there maybe shouldn't even be a UGA boundary? Is that what you're arguing?
Well, I mean, the UGA, I think there needs to be more flexibility in being able to shift it where the demand for where people want to live. I'm a strong believer that if all options need to be available. I mean, if there's people that want to live out in that area, that we need to make sure the infrastructure is there, so they're able to do that. But then there's also a lot of people that they want to live more close to the core of the city. They want to live in Kendall Yards. They want to sometimes live right in the heart of the city. And those options need to be available too. I mean, I'm a firm believer that the government needs to be there to work for the people. And I think making sure that we have the regulations in place that they're gonna allow those people to have the lifestyle that they choose, the government's there to help them be able to do that.
You talked about property rights too, to do with, property ownership, and you mentioned overstepping authority by organizations like Ecology or DNR.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to elaborate a bit on what you meant by that?
Yeah, I mean, and that goes back to a lot of the experience that I've had in the legislature. One in particular that I can remember was back in 2011. I think it was my first year actually working for the legislature. We were contacted by an individual who actually wasn't even in the 6th district. They were actually from the 7th district, but they called us and they owned a piece of property that was on a river. And I apologize, I don't remember exactly what sure. river it was on,
yeah.
But they wanted to cut down some dead trees. I mean, they said these were completely dead trees. They knew, were eventually going to fall over. They wanted to cut down the trees on their property because the trees were dead.
Yeah.
And they were told that they couldn't. They said, no, you can't do that because they're too close to the river, and that the shade from those dead trees still provided shade for fish in the river. But it's like, I mean, it's the trees are going to fall. because they said they were right on the bank, and it's like, they wanted to cut them down before they fell in the river. And now you've got a dead tree laying across the river. And so, I mean, it's just situations like that that I think we need to, I mean, I just think a little more common sense comes into these things where it's like, let's solve that, allow that property owner to remove a dead tree before it becomes a bigger problem. And this tree is now laying across a river.
Yeah.
I just think that's one of the examples there where it's, to me, that doesn't make sense on why somebody wouldn't be able to. It's like they're going to prevent a bigger issue by you allowing them to cut down, a dead tree. Yeah.
So you're just saying more common sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of issues on your own property.
Absolutely, yeah.
What about people that may argue that, I mean, and I'm not talking about that specific issue, but people may say, even as a private property owner, you have to think about the common good too, and for some cases, the environmental laws should apply to your own property.
Well, I think it comes down to if what you're doing on your property does not impact your neighbor's property. I mean, because that's a big one. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not advocating for someone doing something on their property that directly, harms their neighbor's property or anything like that. But I think, if what you're doing on your property causes no impact on anybody else but your property, I mean, I think that there needs to be more ability to do whatever that might be that they're doing on their property, as long as it does not infringe on someone else's property rights.
Sure. Okay. Let's talk about maybe the whole jobs issue. I know that's usually what everybody talks about.
Oh, yeah.
Every election.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everybody comes in and they talk about jobs as the main first thing. And I mean, I've talked to, all the county commissioners about this, especially Al French a lot. But as far as job, promoting job growth, do you have any specific plans or things you'd like to see happen on the commission or continue or any, what's your opinion?
Yeah, you know, I view it, you know, because of my experience, you know, working for the legislature. I mean, I have a lot of relationships with the elected officials, you know, the senators, the representatives, as well as a lot of the committee staff and caucus staff over there. And you know, I'm not someone that's going to see this job necessarily stopping at the boundaries of the county. And so, I mean, if it involves, you know, going over to Olympia and testifying on legislation that will directly benefit Spokane and maybe allow Spokane to improve our local economy here, I'm going to be someone who does that. I mean, I will go over. I will help use those relationships that I've developed to, if there's a piece of legislation that I see will allow Spokane to take it to a next level. Whether it's through government efficiencies, whether it's through direct job creation, I'm someone that's going to bring that to the commission.
What about do you favor any kind of tax breaks for, like, if a major company wanted to move in? Like, I know that there's been some of those West Plains, I think some of the West Plains major businesses that have come in out there got sort of tax deals from the county. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think if it's a company that has a proven track record of being able to generate revenue back to the county, proven track record of employing people with good paying jobs. I think those are situations that we will see as a community pay off in the long run. So I would support something like that if it's a business that has a proven track record of making those pay off.
Okay. What do you have any specific opinion? I'm only bringing this up because it wasn't Candace, but it was one of the other commission candidates that I've interviewed talked about GSI and it's kind of getting a sort of favorable position with the county commissioners, in that we saw that Todd, you know, left to be head of GSI. But do you have any opinions about Greater Spokane Incorporated and its role, its relationship to the county commission?
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody can deny that GSI has been an asset to the area. I mean, they've helped us land some large businesses. But you know, I definitely want to see. I mean, you know, GSI is getting, they're getting a lot of money from the county. I mean, it's several hundred thousand dollars. I mean, I think that there have been 1 year in particular, I think the highest they've gotten around $370,000. I think what was a couple years ago. I mean, so it's a substantial amount of money, of taxpayer dollars, that are going to GSI. But you know, I would like to make sure that we see a clear plan and the direction that GSI is headed. And because that, like I said, that is a lot of money of taxpayer dollars that we're spending. But you know, I would also like to go even further and involve in the discussion and make sure that like the West Plains Chamber, the Spokane Valley Chamber, that they are also involved in these discussions, because we can't forget about those other parts of the our community and of our region here. I mean, because we're very much a commuter county. I mean, there's people that live in unincorporated county, but they work in the Spokane Valley, or they live in Liberty Lake, but they work in downtown Spokane. I mean, so you know, we're definitely a community where if we can bring a business into any area of the county, I mean, I strongly believe that that's a situation where a rising tide really will raise all ships there. So I want to make sure that the communication, the conversation about economic development includes not only GSI, but those other area chambers of commerce that we have as well.
Okay. Now, what about the new STA ballot measure, just overall transportation issues? Do you have specific opinions about that?
I am not a supporter of the current STA proposal. The 200 million dollar proposal that's out there right now with the electric bus. Some people call it a trolley, but you know. So my main concern about that, it really is the cost. I mean, $200 million of a sales tax increase is I think a little too high. I don't think that. I mean, I get the desire to have this iconic route, you know, from Brown's Addition to the community college, but I don't think we necessarily need an iconic vehicle to create an iconic route. And the best example I've seen of this is over in Olympia. They have what they call the Dash, and it goes from the state capitol down Capitol Way to the farmer's market where there's a roundabout, and then it turns around and comes back up Capitol Way through the Capitol campus and just keeps making that route all day long. And you know, they've created this iconic route with normal buses that just you could be at any bus stop along that route, and every 12 minutes a bus will come by and pick you up and take you along that route.
Right.
I think we could do something like that here in Spokane with that same route from Brown's Addition to SCC. We use it with normal buses, but you know, give it a fancy name, promote it, do it through marketing, have covered bus stops with, you know, splashed on the side of it what the name of that route is. You know, I mean, maybe we could even have a community contest to name that route and all that. And I think you'll really get buy-in with the community and make it so when you say that name, you know, like in Olympia, when you say the Dash, or here in Spokane, you know, what, you know, whatever name
so
we give it, people are going to know what that is.
You think that would be a cheaper alternative to the proposal for the trolley thing?
I do. Yes.
What about the outlying areas that are in this STA proposal? I mean, that it has a lot to do with other areas like
there's some bus depots and some park and rides.
Yeah.
You know, I think we need to see something that's a proposal that just focuses on those. I mean, because right now, I think the discussion in our community, so much of the focus is on that electric trolley or electric bus downtown. And I think there's a lot of people that maybe would be in favor of something if it were just for the park and rides, for the bus depots. And, you know, and honestly, I'd have to see what the numbers were to see what kind of proposal they would come through for, you know, for a dollar amount on that. But maybe that's a thing that STA under current revenues would be able to fund without a proposal. I mean, I have not done a breakdown of those numbers, you know, to see if that's something that they would be able to do that way.
Perfect. So I think, and the other one I want to touch on too, while we have some time too, is then, you know, a big part of the county revenue is spent on criminal justice.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have specific things you'd like to, you know, recommend to maybe reduce this huge segment of the budget, or what are your thoughts on either like a new jail or just the criminal justice in particular?
Well, with criminal justice, where I personally would like to see a huge emphasis put on is property crimes. And, you know, this is something that over the last 5-6 months has really come to light on a lot of people's minds. And it actually, a lot of it originated with an article that came out back in March that the Inlander put out.
Yeah,
Stealing Washington, that really dove into the data that showed that, you know, this is a much bigger issue than a lot of people understood. And so, you know, I really want to see the emphasis put on property crimes. I'm very, very thankful that at the state level, Senators Mike Baumgardner and Brian Danzel had pushed forth in the operating budget $300,000 that will be coming directly to Spokane to address property crimes. So,
what does that measure do?
It was an amendment that was put in the budget. So it's going to be $300,000 that comes directly to Spokane for the purpose of combating property crime. So I think that the money is going to be dispersed to several different programs. I think some of it will go to cities, some will go to the county. I don't believe the money actually has been dispersed yet.
So when I asked Candace that same thing, and she talked about, you know, that whole justice reform thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll ask you for your opinion on that. And then she mentioned, which I remember too, was in that Inlander article. Mm-hmm. Didn't it also talk about part of the problem had to do with just state law regarding, I think, repeat offenders of burglaries and such, but also that there wasn't really a way that they didn't have anything set up to do any kind of, you know, parole or any kind of supervision when these guys get out.
In Washington State, and there was actually a bill last year that was introduced that would solve both of those problems. Unfortunately, they didn't pass.
Okay.
But
bill was that? Was that Padden's bill?
Padden had one of them. He had the one that dealt with where with the repeat property, because currently, if it's a repeat property crime offender, they still will get the same sentence each time. There's no enhancement. So, I mean, if someone's in there for their 10th property cry, you know, and they're sentenced, they're still going to get roughly the same sentence they got when they were in there for their first and second one. You know,
that's what Patton's bill.
Yeah, and Patton's would have allowed, it did. Yeah. Yeah. And so his was, okay, if it's a repeat offender, they would be able to get a longer sentence, you know, to keep these people off the streets. Another issue is that when these people are released, there hasn't been any funding at the state or really the mechanism for supervision with these folks once they get out. And so
it's kind of a state issue mostly, isn't it?
A lot of it does. Those are going to be fixes that need to be handled at the state, yes.
What do you think, and how would the $300,000, how's that going to solve that here locally? What would it go for?
I think the state is given a lot of latitude to Spokane, you know, to use that money the way they think it would best go. You know, whether that's for more officers on the street, whether that's going to be for pre-trial services, you know, maybe trying to those types of avenues. But I don't really think they put too many sideboards up there, you know. Okay.
As far as your opinion though too, I mean, you want to focus on the property crime. Mm-hmm. So what specifics are you thinking of doing that may even involve using some of that money?
Yeah, well, I honestly think one of the big ones, I'm going to be somebody that's going to try to go to the state and help Senator Patton get that bill passed about the, you know, with the sentence enhancements for those chronic repeat offenders. I think that will make a huge dent in our property crimes. I've spoken with some folks in law enforcement, and they say a lot of the property crimes goes back to that old kind of 80-20 adage that, you know, 80% of these property crimes are being done by 20%, you know, the same people. And, you know, they know who they are. They catch them every time, but the people are right back out on the streets. So, and they go right back to it. So, you know, there's also, you know, all of this, so much of this comes back to jobs, you know, that we talked about earlier. You know, when our economy is booming, when people can find employment, mm-hmm. you know, they, crime tends to go down. I mean, it, you know, because people can have jobs, provide for their families, and we're not seeing as much. I'm not saying crime completely goes away, because we know that's not the case. But, you know, I think it's definitely something that, you know, that would be another, you know, another tool there, another, you know, that, you know, just another mechanism that will help bring down those types of crimes when our economy is booming.
Okay. And I'm going to let you bring up anything else that we didn't talk about.
Okay.
Let me see. I was going to ask you a follow-up, too, about the UGA stuff. Mm. And if I got this right, I mean, you were saying that the values of the property went up inside the UGA mm-hmm. in areas that hadn't yet been purchased and developed. Correct.
I mean, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So, but you still feel the UGA is a good thing. In other words, here's my general question is, if you didn't have a UGA, you still have these areas that are zoned, like, you know, out where you are, there's probably places that are zoned as small tract agriculture, and they're probably 10-acre mm-hmm. sites. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people can buy those properties, but they have to get a 10-acre or even a 20-acre.
Yeah.
But you don't think that it should just be like kind of free-form development, do you, where there wouldn't even be those limits on 10- and 20-acre parcels outside the UGA? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, I mean, I just, you know, I guess I'm somebody that also believes, too, that, you know, I don't really think that, you know, that if the UGA wasn't there, I mean, I guess I don't really think that things would be as bad as some people think. Like, people think, you know, oh, you know, we're just going to see developments popping up everywhere. But it's like, when they're 20 miles out of town, it's like, you know, I don't think the market's going to be there, you know, for people that'll want to live that far. And as well, also, you know, you're limited by by the infrastructure and by the utilities that are run out there. And, you know, if you're getting so far out there, to get the utilities out there will be so expensive, and the hookups, that I think, you know, cost will also act as a factor to, you know, to keep that from happening.
Right, and that's kind of how those people that want to limit the development, like the FutureWise people, have always said that mm-hmm. same exact argument, that you don't want to make these developments too far out because of that whole thing about the infrastructure that a lot of times has to be paid by the taxpayers.
Well, to run the sources out there would be paid, but the developers do pay the hookups at the end, all the roads within the developments that they are building.
But
developer pays that stuff.
Yeah, those kind of things.
That is true. That is true. Okay. But there's also the property taxes that those. That those people would be paying too once they purchase those homes also mm-hmm. help fund those sources as well.
Like a total thing where there wouldn't be any of these certain kind of zonings like the where there's these agricultural areas. I mean,
no, and part of the Growth Management Act too is to protect agricultural areas. I mean, there's like 14 different planks for protecting agricultural lands. Affordable housing is another one, and that's where sort of my concern about when you create those boundaries, and you limit that amount of developable lands for smaller plots.
Right.
The value goes up on those. So I think that directly kind of contradicts the plank in the Growth Management Act to help provide affordable housing.
Okay.
And so, but also some of the other planks, community engagement, I mean, is another plank. I mean, it's supposed to involve the community in the discussion. And that's something that I think absolutely has to be there because, this community, everybody who lives here has a stake in this community and they need to be a part of this discussion. I've seen some of the hearings that have been held and they're not attended very well. I'd like to see a lot of people be a part of this discussion and really get involved in this.
The Growth Management Hearings Board overruled the county on a certain development, but because the developer had gone in and already started putting in this stuff, remember, it's already gone and they can't really stop it at that point. Do you have concerns about that whole issue?
Yeah, it's called vesting.
Vesting, that's what it was.
That comes down to a state. The fact that there is no state law that prohibits a builder from vesting, it comes back to kind of the thing. I mean, the folks in our community, developers too, home builders. I mean, they're waiting. They have businesses that they're running, and if that boundary is expanded, a proposed boundary is expanded, I mean, they're running on the assumption too that the county did their due diligence and that the county's expanding this, so that's our green light. Let's go in, and if they file their permits, that they get those turned in and they start going to work, and then all of a sudden the Growth Management Hearing Board says no, you can't do that. I think a lot of that comes down to the county maybe working a little closer with the Growth Management Hearings Board and saying, this is what we're planning to do. This is what we're going to do.
And do you think there
are there
be
problems here?
Kind of a, no, is this thinking, so? But do you think there should be some sort of a moratorium where if it's going to be a challenge by the Hearings Board that they should, if it comes down that suddenly there's going to be a challenge, that the county should be able to say to the developer, hold on, we're going to have to wait till this is settled.
Well, I mean, the concern there too is the Growth Management Hearings Board could say, no, it's good. Go ahead. I mean, it's sort of one of those double-edged swords. And now you've now put homes being constructed, economic, the opportunity and economic expansion in our community, you've now delayed it several months. I mean, so because honestly, you don't know if the Growth Management Hearings Board is going to say yes or is going to say no.
Okay.
It's kind of one of those double-edged swords there where, if you have them wait and then the Growth Management Hearings Board says, well, no, they can't build there. Well, then it looks like maybe that worked out. But if you make them wait several months, then and it could stretch on for a year, and then maybe the Growth Management Hearings Board comes back and says, "Yeah, no, you dotted the I's, you crossed the T's. They can build there. Now you have delayed, people purchasing homes. Maybe a home buyer who wanted to build a home there has now jumped over to some other builder, another part of town, and they built there. Or maybe they've built just over the county line." In Ponderay County, if it's up north, or maybe they've maybe they've crossed the border into Idaho because they found a deal there that they just didn't want to pass up. So I mean, you really run that risk of it could have some negative economic impacts on a lot of people, from the home buyer to the home builder to the to our property tax base here locally, and the sort of economic snowball that building a home has on this community.
Okay. And we probably should wrap it up, but is there anything you didn't touch on of all those topics that you wanted to add that you want to talk about for a sec?
One of the things that I wanted to mention that, when it comes back to jobs, when we look at where we're situated here in Spokane County, we have such an amazing resource, and it's our college system here. From where we sit here today in the studio, we're just a couple miles from Gonzaga, Whitworth, Eastern, our fantastic community college system, 70 miles from Pullman with WSU. We continue to graduate tens of thousands of people in our community with associate's degrees, bachelor's degrees, and master's degrees. Mm-hmm. But we keep seeing so many of those people leave our community. And I think if we can capture just a portion of those folks to keep them here, that is going to help us increase the two biggest revenue drivers that a county has, which is its sales tax and its property tax, because those people will be buying homes. That's where the property tax comes in, and they'll be shopping at our retail establishments and restaurants.
How do we keep them here then?
We need to make sure. No, I think it comes down to attracting businesses to locate here, and I think our largest opportunity with that is the West Plains. I mean, because the West Plains has the three biggest things that any major employers are looking for, and that's they have I-90 with a freeway, they have rail access, and they have an international airport. And so I think we really need to be emphasizing what is out there as far as land. I mean, because the land is inexpensive. It's right next to a freeway, an airport, and rail access.
We have a water issue out there, though. There's water problems on the West Plains. Water table's gone down.
I mean, from what I'm hearing is, I mean, that. You know, I'm hearing that there's a concern there, but I still think we can overcome those types of things. And I think that, especially when you're looking at things like aerospace, where when you look at those tier one providers for companies like Boeing that are over on the I-5 corridor, and they're spending, 4 hours in bumper to bumper traffic going down I-5, it's like, well, now you're looking at West Plains to the Boeing plant. It's like, there's not a heck of a lot of time difference there.
Right.
If you get a straight shot on I-90 in the middle of the day. So it's, if we can attract some of those companies to locate here, when you look at our cost of living over here, the pool of talent that's over here, I think that could be a major boom for Spokane County. And, some of it may come down to just good old fashioned going out and recruiting these companies to come on over here. Much like Butch Otter tried to do several years ago to recruit companies out of Washington into Idaho. Everybody calls it, he sent them, his Idaho love letter kind of thing to say, come to Idaho, look how green the pasture is over here. We need to be doing that with those companies in Western Washington, say, come over here, look how green the pasture is here in Spokane County.
Okay,